Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the NBC Network, the podcaster's channel with your host, Hurricane Age. And, you know, today is a very interesting topic because the topic we're going to talk about today is a kind of touchy-feely one. But I think it's worldwide and everybody kind of maybe falls into this, you know, thing. And I'm being intentionally suspenseful because, you know, I want to get that excitement going on here. But really, it is a form of addiction. We've talked about, you know, quite a bit of addiction. We've covered alcoholism, we've covered drugs, we've covered a lot of different levels of, you know, in different topics and different types of shows. But today, my guest is someone who's really advocating and educating people about a very unique type of addiction that is almost innate in the human nature. And, you know, and I'll leave that, you know, to that level. So with me, I have Logan Hufford, who's actually a sexual addiction mentor. Now, as it sounds, sex, you know, addiction or pornography or porn addiction, these are real addictions that are out there in the world. And, you know, it's somehow some people can justify it as being human. It's in human nature at its best, right? Or maybe animalistic, you know, nature, but it is real. And it is damaging. It can affect people. And actually, we did allude to this in the previous show in mental health, you know, that that's a form of addiction that is pretty cool. It attracts people. It gets you high. There's a high to it. And there's all kind of stuff. But our guest today is Logan, is going to take us to a journey, his personal journey and why he, you know, he changed his path and how he did it. Through religious, you know, belief, through other, you know, formalities, whatever it is, we're going to learn about it today. And, you know, and I want to say this, folks, I don't care what your denomination is, what location in this planet is. This is something that I think everybody can, you know, benefit from as a discussion. It is a little, you know, taboo in some circles, but frankly, it is needed to have a discussion about. And certainly we'll have guidance about it. So, hey, Logan, welcome to the show, man.
I appreciate you having me on, brother. And the reason why we need to talk about it is because it is taboo, right? I mean, I'll just say that right now, like, because it does tend to be something that gets swept under the rug, that if I do have a struggle, you know, if I've got shame in this area, well, I can't talk to my friends about it. I can't talk to people about it. I can't learn, you know, with healthy resources the way that I can with maybe alcohol addiction or other struggles. So absolutely, I appreciate you giving me the platform to talk about it and to shed light on this.
Well, we are about health, you know, physical and mental, and this definitely falls into that realm. And it is actually, it affects your health, it affects your sometimes, oh, yeah, wealth, it affects your relationship. You know, I mean, we've had marital, you know, discussions and shows about, you know, relationships. It affects your relationships because through adultery and infidelity and all this stuff. You know, all this stuff is real, and people struggle with this. And as you, and I love what you said, this alcoholism is acceptable to a degree because it's kind of like, you know, people can talk about it, right? Right. You know, people drink, but a lot of people, right, are not really keen on sharing, like, hey, I'm having affairs, I'm doing stuff, I'm, you know, having orgies, whatever it is they're doing in their world in this stuff where, like, you know, they're addicted to their computer and checking out all these pages and stuff like that. That's out there. There's plenty of stuff. And we could talk about historic stuff that's always been there. You know, it's pretty interesting. So Logan, let's talk about, you know, what really got you into this addiction, how, if you don't mind, and then certainly, how did you discover that you were, because anybody who has an addiction, chances are they don't know that they have an addiction. I mean, they know, but they don't know. They know, but they can't admit it. They know, but they
don't know. There are way more addicts than there are people who say, I struggle with addiction. Like, that's just, that's the bare minimum way to say it, right? I mean, absolutely.
Get it, man. Tell us about the story and how you discovered that you really got into, you know, this form of addiction somehow. And yeah. I think through you, a lot of people will be like, I think I'm in that world too. I'm in that world too. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. And one other thing I'm just going to say, because if anyone's still listening, but maybe they're on the fence about, like, okay, I don't think this would apply to me. I don't think I got anything to learn here. Here's my challenge to you. If you're watching this, if you're listening to this, and you're like, I don't struggle with this, I've never had a struggle with this, you might be right. If you are one of the lucky few, because I'm telling you right now, you are in the minority, if that's the case. If you're one of the lucky few who does not struggle with pornography addiction, with sexual addiction in general, I promise you, you have multiple people who are in your inner circle who do struggle. The general number, depending on how you quantify addiction and, you know, what study you're looking at, the general number is 7 out of 10 guys struggle with pornography addiction. 7 out of 10 guys and 3 out of 10 women. So if you don't personally struggle, good, but still learn from it, because you've got people that you love, that you care about, who do struggle. I promise you that. So my story, I mean, to be honest, I'm going to do something kind of weird, and I'm going to start my story by really starting at the end, which is to answer your question about when I realized that there was a real problem. So I'm 34 years old now. This is, picture me 9 years ago. I'm 25 years old. I've been married for a few years, for 4 years at this point. I've already got 3 boys, and my wife is pregnant with our 4th son. We started, you know, we got married young and started having kids young. So married for 4 years, we got 4 boys, 1 inside her tummy. And I've had multiple sexual affairs over that period of time from the time that we first got engaged all the way through to this point in 2015. I have been addicted to porn this whole time, in addition to the sexual affairs. I'd hired multiple prostitutes. The self-hatred, the shame that I lived in, because here's the thing, I wasn't just like trying to escape my life, or, you know, oh, I couldn't handle having a family and I wanted to escape it. No, I wanted desperately to be a good dad. I wanted desperately to be a good husband. I loved my wife. I was very attracted to my wife. I loved my boys. I wanted to be a good man, a good family man. But I had gotten myself so trained, and I emphasize, I got myself. It wasn't anyone else's fault. It wasn't the disease of addiction's fault. But I made so many bad choices over a long period of time, to where my MO, my way of dealing with life, had now become almost a second nature. And it wasn't completely automatic. It was still my choices, but that's what addiction is. It has become muscle memory. You know, it is almost to the point where it's automatic. And so, yeah, it's still a moral choice, but it has become part of my limbic system. And that's something that most people, myself included, before recovery, do not understand about addiction. I take extreme ownership over my choices, and yet at the same time, it became, from a physiological standpoint, it became harder to make a healthy choice the further into addiction I got, because I had literally rewired my brain in a very unhealthy, very corrupted way to chase after those dopamine hits, to chase after the high that I would feel. And when I'm talking about dopamine hits and highs, I'm not even talking about the sexual activity. Like, yes, there was the physical thing that I was chasing there. Sure. Most of the high that I was chasing, it was all of the extracurricular stuff around it. It was getting the text back from a woman, you know, the forbidden fruit, right? It was, you know, waiting in the parking lot, waiting to meet up with somebody and feeling terrible, but I also felt an adrenaline rush. You know, all of those things provided these hits, these highs that I didn't start off chasing that, but it eventually got to the point where that stuff, I wanted to keep chasing it. I wanted to keep chasing it. And with pornography, there was some of that, but there was a whole other thing, which was, and this is why I talk so much about porn. I don't just talk about pornography, but that it's the big focus of what I do in recovery and on Instagram and stuff, is talking about the dangers of pornography, because pornography teaches me that I can have whatever I want to look at whenever, right? I can pick and choose how many, what's the hair color, you know, what's the ethnicity, you know, whatever. I can pick all that. I can control it all. I can decide it all. And then I want to stop, or I want to switch to a different website, or I get to choose it all, right? It's like, you know, giving a little kid access to a candy store and letting them, you know, live there, except it's the X-rated version. That's what pornography does. It's to put it very lightly, it teaches me to stay immature for a very long time. So going back to, you know, to answer your question. So as a 25-year-old, hating myself, hating what my life had become, but feeling like I can't stop. My wife then gave me an ultimatum. She had known about the infidelities, but she's in survival mode, right? We got 4 little kids, you know, she's pregnant. She's trying to just take care of the family. And by God's grace, she had the strength to face her abuser, me, and say, okay, I'm done. If you do not get serious help, like, I'll give you a chance to get serious help, but if you don't get serious help, then you're going to lose me in the boys. And I knew that she meant that. I believed her. So that started my journey to reach out and try some resources. It was a very two steps forward, three steps back, you know, non-linear type of journey. Because I'll say right now, my sobriety date was almost a year later. That was the summer of 15. My sobriety date is May 19th, 2016. I didn't start getting serious traction from, you know, staying away from pornography and all this until 2016. But I started to attend groups. I started to reach out to people. I started to do some things. And there was a lot of like doing the bare minimum. You know, okay, like let me just try to manage this, right? Because I didn't think I could ever not be in bondage to it. And yet, you know, my Instagram handle is no longer in bondage, because now, by God's grace, almost 9 years later, to be able to say I'm Logan Hufford and I'm no longer in bondage to sexual addiction, brother, I didn't think I could ever say those words ever. And I'm at this point, I'm here, you know, to shout on any rooftop that'll have me to talk about, hey, you know, God put these people in my path. He put this recovery program in my path. He's given me these tools to be able to not live in that cave anymore. And whatever I can do to share these tools with other guys, with other folks struggling, you know, I want to do it. I need to do it.
Well, so first of all, I have to commend you for being this brave to really share. You know, this is probably one thing that in anybody's closet, you know, this is the laundry that no one wants to actually share with the world.
Sure.
You know, it's a fact, right? I mean, like you said, I mean, your statistics are pretty scary, 7 out of 10, yeah. You know, in guys, and 3 out of, you know, and by the way, I want to talk about that ratio, because it is, there is a natural factor between women and men in terms of their addiction with the sexual, I guess, you know, feelings, right? We're just right. Two different beings, two different ways. Our dynamics are different. And so it makes it, you know, and it's a fact in reality, right? But you know, so again, that you're very brave to actually have faced this and, you know, taking care of it, but also taking the journey to help others, or at least, you know, make people aware of what it is, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So you've touched on a few things. First of all, you did say it wasn't so much the act or the outcomes, you know,
right?
It was really the adventure of it, like the thrill that you were getting, and literally, you know, it's like a kick, right? And you right. Said it, like the dopamine, the adrenaline kicks, you know, these things were like, you know, just, you know, you're doing something like, you know, this is like, you know, interesting stuff, different, right? You know, you're almost like technically playing with the devil, if you refer to
yeah.
it that way. but really playing with the law, because I mean, we talk about prostitution and stuff, there's a lot of factors, disease, there's all kind of risk factors, right? that are attached to this world, yet people still do, you know.
Yep.
And it is actually, there's industries that are literally, you know, that cater to this. I mean, just as there yep. is alcohol industries and tobacco industries and drug industries, there's an industry for this. I mean, whether from film, as you said, pornography, I mean, it's accessible. And even before the internet, you had it. This is like one of the oldest, I mean, prostitution is the oldest, you know, profession in humanity, right? And
right.
And sex is something that is, you know, innate. It's like something that is natural. And so it's primal, you know, in terms of our, I guess, wants and needs as
yeah,
humans.
It's a natural urge.
It's a natural urge. So it's like wanting to eat, you know, sometimes that just people have different levels of right. I don't know, hormonal, you know, activity that kind of get them into, you know, libidos, whatever, you know, get, you know, better than others, I guess. And that's, you know, there's also, you know, literally hormones that are in action here that can make some people a little bit more aggressive than others, and so on and so forth. But all this is real, and it's scientific. It's there's a mental factor, there's a physical factor. And as you said, the easier it gets to people to have access, and now it is actually in all palms. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, you know, back in the days, you had the video stores, you would go to the back room, and, you know, and they still exist, I think, in some parts, you know, remember, I don't know, you're young now, but I think you've caught up to the VHS and DVDs and stuff, you know,
yep.
era, and those things were available.
No, I'm an interesting age, because yeah, I'm younger than, you know, I'm 34. So there's plenty of guys in recovery that I've, you know, connected with that are older than me, but I'm old enough to where, you know, I also grew up in a relatively sheltered upbringing where, you know, we didn't have Playboys laying around. So I grew up, you know, there were no iPads, right? We're talking late 90s. There's no smartphones. There's no, you know, it was dial-up internet. And to use the internet, you got to make sure nobody's on the phone, right? Like, porn was not accessible. Definitely not in my house. But that's kind of the whole thing, is it wasn't specifically about porn. It was feeling a rush. But the first thing that I ever taught myself to use as a sexual stimulation, the first time I sexually objectified pictures of women, was through JCPenney catalogs, the lingerie and swimwear ads. That was the first time I sexually objectified pictures of women. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know what the feelings that I would, I just knew I liked how I felt. And so, you know, by any sort of definition, that's not porn, right? But that was my introduction to it. I'll use like this analogy. When I'm saying it's not about the sexual activity, like, I'll put it to you this way. I mean, hopefully this will make a little bit more sense to anyone that struggled with maybe a different addiction, or even just understands how something about addiction. Yeah. Are there alcoholics who love being drunk? Sure. But alcoholics, as a general statement, they're not alcoholics because they just love to be drunk, or they're not alcoholics just because they think that whiskey is the best tasting beverage. Like, there are plenty of people that do enjoy the taste of whiskey. There are plenty of people that do enjoy being drunk, but that's not why they're an alcoholic. Or a different way would be, if somebody's a smoker, you know, you're not likely to find a bunch of people who are smokers specifically and only because they just love tobacco. Like, that's just their favorite thing in the world. No. It's a whole thing. There's a social connection, right? There's triggers. There's things that, okay, something's happening. Now I want to go have a smoke. Something's happening. Now I want to go have a drink. Oh, I'm with my buddies. We're going to go do the fill in the blank, whatever. And it's no different with a sexual addiction, except it looks very different. It's something, because of what we talked about, because of the whole, it's kind of in the closet thing. It's something where, yeah, I wasn't doing things largely out visible to other people. It was all hidden. It was all shame. It was all a secret double life. But, you know, I would have a stressful day at work, or I would have a low paycheck because I was in sales. I would have a small paycheck or whatever. Instead of me wanting to go get trashed at the bar, I would go off and look at porn in the bathroom at work, or I would go hire a prostitute, or I would go start texting, you know, somebody in my phone and hope that it would go somewhere. Like, that's how I dealt with the stressors of life. Instead of going and picking up a bottle of Jack, I was watching videos on my phone. You know, that was my coping mechanism.
Again, Logan, what do you listen? You're talking about the real stuff. I mean, when you're talking about alcohol and tobacco, there's addictives that are in, you know, I guess intentionally put into this product, so they actually right. work your body.
Right.
In pornography, maybe there's nothing that you, it's not edible, but it is subjected to you. You're basically suggested these things through visual, you know, arousement or enhancements, whatever you want to call it. So it is actually giving you a kick in your mind. And it's the same way, like, we get, you know, high from a movie, and you know, you're getting excited about watching something or listening to something. It's the same thing. And then, of course, there's the physical piece of it that aligns well with that, and that kind of satisfies, you know, the human needs, right? And right. So there's that. But again, going back to, like you said, in the era that you were, you know, growing up, it was still not sophisticated to a degree today, right? But right. you know, at the time, there were toll free numbers that you can call. You know, you had the Playboy magazine, you have different magazines. I mean, even old movies, if you look at movies 70s or 60s, they have pictures and, you know, in right. the movies, or like posters and things like that, that kind of introduce some of this. And that's the thing. It's like, it's been introduced in the culture, you know, slowly but surely. I mean, if you go back a century ago, you know, even the dress code out there was different. You know, people were right. more, you know, covered and so on and so forth, and it became a little bit more liberal and more liberal, and you know, and you know, things got shorter in the, right. the women's space and the guy's space, and it just became like, it's all cool, you know, like, let's it's my life, I'm free, and so on and so forth, and I get all that. But it got away a little bit from the religious aspect, so, because again, and we'll talk about religion further, but in general, it was, you know, looked at the wrong way. And I was just right. literally, I was just kind of catching up on the picture of the movie, right? You know, it's with Mel Gibson. It's an iconic right. movie. I just stumbled on it like a week ago or something. And it's funny because there's a scene about, you know, the son meeting this girl, and they had to get permission to actually even meet. he was wrapped up in a freaking bag, you know, and sealed in, you know, because he was spending the night over. And it's just like to show you like how historically, you know, right. we were and where we are today. Now it's just like every movie has some sort of a scene, you know, into it. So it's becoming like very common. And so it's normal. It became normalized. And therefore, it became a little bit more acceptable to everybody. Yet, everybody knows. Nobody's like, hey, listen, I'm going out there. I'm doing my thing. Now there's a lot of places where, as you said, you can get a hit. I mean, you get out of the, you know, there's after hour or like, you know, business hours. And, you know, there's go-go bars. And there's different places where you can go and really kind of, even just peep places. I mean, literally in those adult, you know, stores, right? So there's all kind of stuff. Now someone can say, Hurricane, you know about this stuff. Yeah, I've been around the block long enough to know a lot of things, you know, so right. just for those people that may question that. And, you know, but fact is, you know, this is real. And people, yep. you know, it's a struggle, by the way, men and women, because some of these places, they're frequented by both, you know, genders. So it's not even like, you know, who is, you know, one versus the other. Obviously, men may have a little bit, as you said, 7 out of 10 versus 3 out of 10. There is a difference in just how we operate. But you're right. Like, you know, there is something that was kicking with you. Like, it was just like making a difference. Now, my question to you is this. It started at what age? Because I want to address the age piece because, you know, a lot of parents are fearful about content. And, you know, yep. you can see it. I mean, you mentioned PG, you and I were talking about this before. You know, in the movies, we have PG-13, we have different ratings. And then, right. of course, you have X-rated movies that don't even make it to the movies, right? But the fact of the matter is, these ratings are there for a reason. And so, depending on the stuff, and then when you're talking about things that are online, I mean, Google, Master, I mean, there's no, YouTube is clean. But like, if you go to Google, I mean, it's, you know, do whatever you want. I mean, it's all open territory, right? And so you have all these things. So who stops, you know, kids at early age to do stuff? Now, with kids today having a phone at their disposal early on, and you have all different measures, even TV, like back in the days on cable, you have these permissions and passwords protected stuff, even, right. you know, so there were means, but they're not really strong means. I mean, even back in the days, you could get, you know, all these channels and things like that. Even pay-per-view has the stuff, you know, that you can buy. You go to a hotel, you have adult channels and stuff. So it's right. always accessible. And so if you have children, and that's the reason I'm asking about the age, because there is a point in life where the kids kind of open up their eyes to this world.
Yeah.
And there's like seeing, you know, the other gender, the other sex, and it gets a little, you know, now you see things, it start giving you some nice little excitement in your mind, and you want to explore these things. And one thing leads to the other. Same thing with tobacco. It's like, oh, let me test that, you know, the little cigarette. Let me have a little sip. And that's it becomes, you know, a cup, and a cup becomes a bottle, and the bottle becomes a pack, and the rest is history, right? And same thing, you know, one cigarette to a pack to like an addiction. Now you have drugs and so on and so forth. So it gets, you know, and similar here in your example. So what age did you literally start entertaining these thoughts? And because and we want to spend some time on that just so we can share with people maybe what can we do to help them at least understand what to look for in terms of, because you obviously went through this and your parents may not have even caught up to you. You know, it seems, you know, maybe that's the case. I don't know if they were aware, they were not aware. And you can share with that, whatever you can share. Of course, this is your life. So, you know, I'm not asking, you know, anything that you're not willing to share with the world. So,
yeah. So I've answered this question many, many times, and I don't have an exact age, but I'll say 10. It was about 10 years old. In terms of when I first started chasing that high of sexually objectifying pictures of women, I know that it was way before puberty. I didn't, you know, I didn't understand how sex worked. I didn't understand, you know, the differences between a male and female body, you know, to any sort of, you know, any sort of degree. It was just like, I was just like a little kid and like, oh, okay. Like, I like how this looks. And then it was around 13 that I discovered masturbation. And shortly after that, maybe 13, 14, when I first started addictively watching online pornography. And it was very rare that I ever had the opportunity. But when I could, I would, you know, my dad was at work and then my mom would be at a doctor's appointment or something. I would sneak onto the computer and I would watch videos. But it was, you know, it might've been something, there might've been times where it was like, you know, twice in 1 year that I'd get the opportunity to do that. It was not super common, but it was definitely, it was already to a compulsive level where if I had the opportunity, it was a given that I was going to do that. And to be honest, that pretty much stayed the course or got progressively worse for the next 12 years, you know, because by the time I was married, if I ever was away from my wife, away from responsibilities, you know, for more than an hour, I'm probably going to be going and looking at porn. I'm probably going to be, you know, seeing what I can find out there to feed my addiction. And one thing I will say in terms of as a parent, because yeah, we got four boys, you know, my boys are 12, 11, 10, and 8. So we're right there in it, right? I mean, these are the ages where they're going from little kids who just want to play with Hot Wheels to, okay, I've got a crush on so-and-so, or, oh, I want to go do this. And I'm not going to pretend one bit that I'm an expert or that I've got it figured out. But here's where me and my wife, here's how we approach it. And yes, I'm saying my wife, which is, that's a whole other part of the story that we can get to, is we are still married. And yet it's only by a miracle. And I can talk about what that miracle looked like. But how we approach parenting when it comes to this stuff is, I got no clue the perfect way to keep them from something or to make sure that they're prepared for something. But one thing that we can do is to have constant conversations about life, to just make sure that those communication threads are open. And we don't do it perfectly, but we are very intentional to talk about life with our kids. We don't generally have private conversations where our kids are not allowed to talk with us about something. Like, we don't invite our kids to talk with us every single time my wife and I sit down. But if we're talking at the dinner table and, you know, our kids are already done eating and we start to talk about a heavy topic, we don't like shuttle the kids off, or we don't necessarily go to the bedroom and close the door to talk, because it's like, hey, we're talking about real life. So if they want to listen in, if they want to talk to us about it, no problem, because it's real life. Why would we not want to include them in real life, right? I'm not saying that we don't ever have private conversations, but we don't generally. The other thing is, when our kids ask us questions, we talk to them about it. We don't make up those little white lies that I think are very much normalized with parents about, like, oh, I don't really want to tell my kids about how the real world works, so I'm just going to, you know, joke about this or joke about this. It's like, no, like, I call that like baby talk. We don't do baby talk in our family. Again, do I talk to my 8-year-old a little bit differently than how I'm talking to you? Sure. But I'll tell you right now, it's not that different.
I guess
it's real life. Our kids, they know our story. They know that dad was unfaithful. They know that dad struggled with sexual addiction. And on one hand, it's a beautiful thing in the sense that, because they know the full story, they know what redemption looked like. They know how hard we worked individually for our own healing and together, you know, in our marriage. They know how hard their mama worked in her recovery, her healing journey. They know, you know, what I've done to work on healthy habits and all these things, and how I work with men now. Like, they know all that stuff. It's also led to some uncomfortable conversations, some uncomfortable questions. There was something just a few months ago where I was talking with my oldest boy, or we weren't actually even having a conversation yet. But something came up about kissing, and he was like, oh, so he was talking about kissing. My 12-year-old was like, so is that's what you were doing with those other ladies back when you used to, you know, when you were cheating on mom? Like, that was not comfortable for me to answer, right? That was definitely a hard conversation, but I'm so grateful that he felt free to ask that question. I'm so grateful that he felt safe, you know, asking his dad that. And the other part is, you know, there's not going to be a point where, like, they grow up and they're 20 years old or they're 30 years old, and they're like, suddenly they find out this deep, dark secret about their parents, right? I don't ever want that to happen. It's like, no, like, right, wrong, or indifferent, you're going to know, you know, what your mom and dad have been through, and you're going to know the tough lessons we've learned and the areas where I still screw up or the areas where I still struggle. I'm going to be very open about those things. I want my parent, or keep saying this, I want my kids to look up to me, but I want them to I don't want them to look up to me just because. I hope that they look up to me because they see a man who is genuine and honest and willing to work on himself. And if they can look up to that man, then you know I see that as a good job.
Well, Logan, thank you. I mean, there's just quite a bit there. One is the idea of early age. I mean, you started, you said around 10. And today, I mean, even in elementary school, there's sexual education. So they start way early. I mean, it's not even at, you know, at an older age where you're a teen or so. This is like, you know, I'm talking about you haven't even hit fifth grade, right? So this is becoming more common, at least in the States. So that's a big one, right? And so kids already are kind of aware of things. And so they start kind of the path of discovery, if you want to call it that way. And of course, you know, if you remember way back in time, I mean, schools were boys' schools, girls' schools kind of thing, right? You know, stuff like that. That kind of changed over the decades, and now it's all common and everybody does whatever. I mean, my kids are, you know, one is, you know, just graduated high school and the other one is graduating this year. They tell me stories about stuff since they were in middle school, you know, kids are pregnant and so on and so forth. So sexual activity is pretty alive in early ages today. I mean, literally it's amazing, right? Things have changed a bit. And also the access, as we said, is a lot, you know, you had, you know, maybe a, you know, far in between opportunities to actually get online to even sneak into. Most of these kids today, you know, unfortunately they have their rooms, they close their door, and it's very difficult to stuff. And they can, everything's password protected. They have their own logins and their phones. And you can't even talk to, and let's be, you know, clear, at least in the States, very difficult to actually force a kid, for example, let me see your phone, let me see this. You know, I mean, there's child services, it can be, you know, perceived as an abuse. There's all kinds of stuff. Now, as a parent, you know, we want to protect our kids. And, you know, there's that fine line between how you do it, where you do it. Right. Your approach, which is being kind of open about your past and stuff. And by the way, I want to say this, and, you know, folks, if you're watching and listening, what Logan has been through, you know, some people say like, well, he did it to himself, whatever. You know, no one picks an addiction on your own. It's something that just happens. And then before you know it, as you said, you're into this and it is very difficult to come back. Now, you wanted a family and you got the family, but you can get rid of that whole, you know, decade plus of your luggage. And it's an illness, technically, right? That's what addiction is. So you had that, you know, and it's very difficult. Now, your wife, I don't know if she knew, she didn't know at the time, you know, when she met you. Now, that's the other thing. There's a big factor. If she knew, it's one thing. She didn't, you know, it's another, because now she discovers this new personality that you have. And that makes it difficult. But I have to say, I mean, she stood by you, and the ultimatum she gave you was probably the wake up call. Like, hey, smack, you know, get up, you know, smell the coffee, smell the beans here. And, you know, you're on your own and you're not going to be part of this family. Now, that kind of was the, and sometimes that's exactly, it takes a very rude awakening to a lot of people, especially when addiction, to actually make that transfer, to take the initiative to make, you know, the necessary changes and taking the steps to get out of it. And you said, it was back and forth, you know, two steps out, you know, one step back, whatever. A year later, you got it. And by the way, there's no one that can tell you like, hey, I just woke up and it's over. It ain't going to be over, because the temptation is going to be there.
Go ahead. I will say, I've definitely heard that. It's 99% of the time, it's from somebody who's like, it's their second week of recovery. And they're like, oh, you know, I feel so bad. I'm never going to do it again. Like, I've already talked to my wife and let her know I'm never... It's like, okay, like, you might believe the words you're saying, but because I've been there, but guess what I did a month later? Guess what I did 6 months later? Guess what I did 2 weeks later? I did it again. Because if nothing changes in my infrastructure, if nothing changes in my brain patterns, if nothing changes in how I deal with life, I'm going to go back to the same. It's like a rut in the road that's just going to naturally take me where I've always been going. So people definitely try to say, oh, I'm healed, I'm good. And I've heard stories from folks who actually have stayed away from whatever their addiction was. You know, people that, hey, I was an alcoholic for 20 years, and I'm making this up, but like this type of thing, right? It was like, I was alcoholic, and then, you know, I got a DUI and I almost killed somebody, and I never touched a drink since. I believe that those things do happen, but they are exceedingly rare. That it almost never happens that way, where I just choose to turn off a limbic behavior that has been created, that I've hardwired into myself over the course of years, and I'm just not going to do it again. Because that toggle switch doesn't exist, not generally.
Oh, so we can cross that line, you know, since we're in this discussion right now. So your wife gave you the ultimatum, you seek the necessary assistance and help, and it did work out, and you start working on your relationship. Now, as you said, those infidelities or their affairs, were they really affairs? See, that's the other thing that, you know, people sometimes may not understand. To you, they were not affairs. It was not for love. It was just to satisfy an addiction. It's like having a hit. You know, again, well, I don't know. I don't want to judge.
There were different types. And I can expand on that. Yeah.
Sure. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So a couple things. Like, you and I talked off air. I'm extremely intentional about how I talk about my past, because I don't ever want to glorify my unhealthy behaviors. I'm not here to share war stories. That's not what I'm about. I did terrible, despicable things, and I own that. So I'm careful with my verbiage. When I say like sexual affair, or sometimes I'll say sexual encounter, what I'm not trying to do is minimize. I'm not trying to be vague to hide anything, but I also don't want to be triggering as much as possible, right? And my point is not to build excitement with my story and sensationalize it. Most of the sexual encounters that I had with real women were, what, you know, the general term would be hookup, right? And I hate that term, but that's what it would be. It was, I want to chase after this thing. And again, the thing being like the dopamine hits and all these. And then once it gets to, basically it gets to fruition, which is, okay, now there's a physical connection. Well, now I want nothing to do with this person, because now I'm feeling all the shame. I'm feeling all the self-hatred and depression, and oh my gosh, I'm such a terrible person. I did it again. I can't believe it. All those negative feelings are just like piled up, and there's no more high. So I want nothing to do with that person. That was a very common cycle. There's a whole part of recovery. It's the relapse cycle. And that's a big part of it is, you know, it builds and builds, builds and builds and builds. It's like this giant oval. And when it gets to the point of acting out, or, you know, physically involving myself with somebody or looking at porn, whatever, there, after that period, there's a huge letdown period. And usually I want nothing to do with my addiction. The problem is that only sticks around for so long. It might stick around for 5 minutes, and then I start chasing after something again. It might stick around for, you know, 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months, but it's not going to stay forever. Eventually I will start to chase after it. But the physical, you know, the physical connections, the physical affairs, they were generally about attention. There was some chasing after the physical, the sexual, but it was also a lot of the attention that I was chasing after that. Power and control, that, you know, I want to dominate the situation. I want to be in control, just like I did with porn. I wanted to be able to do that same thing with a real woman. So, you know, I wasn't going to, I mean, this is a really blunt way to put it, but it's honest. I didn't generally chase after somebody who was not easy for me to control. Here's what it was. I was a predator looking for easy prey. That's a terrible way to view people, but that's truly how I viewed women. So I didn't want to have to put in a ton of work. You know, I was going to go for somebody that seemed likelier to give me what I wanted. My whole infrastructure, when it comes to my addiction, I built up in that way. Some of it intentionally, some of it unintentionally, or some of it subconsciously. But there were a couple, I would say there were two women where I was chasing after the attention, I was chasing after the physical, but I also did, there was a strong emotional connection. And those two, especially the last affair I ever had, those were really hard for me to truly break from, because there was the emotional connection. These ones were different, where I didn't have that experience of I want nothing to do with you. I had some of that, but there was enough of an emotional bond built up that I did want to continue having a friendship or something. And so it was even, as much as all the other ones were destructive, all the other ones were evil, this was even more destructive, because there was some of that like relational glue built up. The last affair I ever had was one where it was not a one-time thing. It was a month-long affair, and it was extremely difficult for me to break away from that, far more than any other relationship I ever had.
You know, Logan, listen to you. I mean, and probably all listeners are watching, you know, and viewers. That, you know, when you talk, when you have a lot of, you watch shows about relationships and, you know, infidelity and things like that. You know, you mentioned something about, you know, finding a connection or finding, you know, somebody that, the attention, right? A lot of people start with just that. I mean, that's all there is. Maybe at home, they're not, you know, and by the way, male and female here. So let's be clear, you know, husbands and wife, there's, you'll be surprised. I mean, the balance in terms of who cheats on who, but the fact of the matter is, you know, it is real. It happens. And there is a reason for that. Maybe there's a lack of things. And, you know, and, you know, we've, again, we've talked about this and, you know, we have also podcasts out on the network that, kind of address a little bit about the relationships and how things happen, but you have that. And therefore someone starts kind of finding things outside of the household, right? Or after the marital, you know, right. I guess realm. And then therefore now it starts with, it's a casual encounter. Like you said, a hookup, it's a good, you know, I'm just having a good time and there's no, it doesn't mean anything, right? Then, as you said, now humans are humans, feelings occur, and now you get attachments. That becomes a little bit more difficult, and that's where the problems happen, and so on and so forth. So now, and by the way, I'm not, you know, glorifying as in any, you know, shape or form here, or I'm just trying to kind of put this on the table here, because, you know, people judge people in general. He cheated, she cheated, and so on and so forth. But nobody knows really what's going on in the household. I mean, is the relationship really smooth? Are there, you know, different problems in the house? Is there, it's a healthy, is the sexual piece, you know, happening, and so on and so forth. All these things, like, you know, maybe it's a man is different than women, and that's actually even a fact scientifically. So is there a compatibility? All these things sometimes do happen, and a lot of relationships also start just with that. They wind up in a marriage and they don't last long because they were not really built on true emotions and stuff. So all this stuff, and we're not going to relationships now and that kind of thing, but we're talking about it is a part of it because it affects this, right? Now, in your case, you found someone that was willing to give you the second chance, and you worked, you know, with her to do this, especially, I mean, you have four kids, I mean, and a fifth on the way. Now, obviously, the fifth.
Sorry. So we had four kids in terms of, the fourth one was in her tummy. So that, yeah, we have four boys total. Yeah.
Okay.
Three boys that were crawling around, and then the fourth one inside. Yeah.
And this was when this all happened. So right? Yep. Correct? Yeah.
She was pregnant or already had kids through most of all of the affairs. Yeah.
Now, again, I mean, can I ask you a question? Did you in your redemption and treatment, did you seek any assistance, any mediation between you and your wife, and also just, you know, some mental, you know, sessions and stuff? I mean, again, I don't know if that's something you want to, you know, answer or not.
No problem. Yeah, and as with everything I've shared to this point, at least, this is descriptive. This is accurately descriptive of what we did. This is not necessarily prescriptive of what I think you should do, right? I mean, there are some tools and some things I'll share that I think are prescriptive, that are general, you know, good tools. But so me and Carrie, my wife Carrie, we never went to formal counseling. We did a ton of, I'll say counseling work in our recovery programs. They were not lightweight programs. But we never did sit down with an LP, you know, an LPC and dive into this stuff. Not at all saying that you shouldn't do that. Most of the folks that we work with in recovery do meet with a therapist. There's different ways to find people, you know, that have healthy tools, that can give you healthy tools. And of course, it's not a binary thing. Do you do this or that? A lot of people do. Yeah, let me do both. Let me do recovery and find a therapist. I did heavy, heavy therapeutic work within the recovery program. I was in a 2-year, essentially voluntary house arrest program that was hours of homework every single day. It was homework every single day, hours of homework every single week. It was a phone call I had to make every single day to another recovery brother, multiple recovery meetings with my mentor and with groups every single week. My wife was going through sexual betrayal trauma healing through her recovery program. So she is doing deep dive work with ladies that have been where she's been. I'm doing deep dive work with guys. But one of the beautiful parts about the work that we were able to do, the people that we were introduced to, we didn't just, and I always highlight this when I talk about recovery, we didn't just meet people who had been where we were at. That is a big thing. Like it's a beautiful thing to struggle and to feel like you're the only one. And then suddenly you're introduced to a group of people who share your struggle. That's awesome. but that doesn't necessarily bring about any healing. Cause all that does is, the way I think about it is like, okay, so I'm not the only one trapped in this cave. There's other people trapped in here too. So like, there's some camaraderie, but we're still all trapped in the cave, right? But here's the beautiful thing about the recovery infrastructure that we became a part of, was there were multiple people on the other side of healing, multiple people who had experienced years of healthy living, years of recovery. So they weren't just able to say, hey, I get it, I understand the struggle. They were also able to be like, yeah, I've been there, but I'm not there anymore. Let me show you the roadmap to, you know, how to get out of there. And that was a beautiful thing.
Well, thank you. What you're doing right now is exactly that, you know, in a different way. I mean, you're using a different platform that is also now available to people. So thank you for doing that. Now, what by the way, that, I appreciate how you kind of broke that down, because you're right. You know, there's different ways to kind of recover. And as you said, some people do multiple kind of combinations of things that can help, or you can just do one versus that, whatever works on both sides. But what I like about this is that both of you kind of were determined to maintain the relationship, you know, and work together towards. I mean, your wife could have said, you know what, the hell would you do? Right. I'm out, you know, you did me wrong and that's it. But she didn't. So, you know, that's a great woman there in a way. And some people can say, well, what kind of woman is there? You know, people judge, unfortunately, you know, a lot of things. But here's the thing. No one can judge other people unless you're in their shoes. So if you're not in the shoes of people, I don't think you can step. But again, you know, folks, we're not here to give you our personal opinion about how you want to, you know, you're riding your life. But certainly, you know, let's just be sensitive to every person, because again, no one chooses these things. You know, there's a lot of dynamics in this world that make things the way they are. And we're going to touch slowly. We're going to start emerging into like your other level of redemption through religion and finding God and so on and so forth. Because here's the thing, folks. In this world, there's some solid, you know, religious denominations that are pretty, you know, ancient, right? And I think all these religions have few things in common. And one of them is fornication is forbidden in a lot of the texts and the books and on the religious, you know, beliefs. And so, unfortunately, I think in modern society, we have been so far apart from those texts and books and beliefs and practices that these things are now easier to be, you know, fallen into, right? Yeah. And the truth is, you know, as it's the work of the devil, as, you know, I don't care what religion you probably can relate to that this terminology is used. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the old sin, right? I mean, you know, it happens. It's something that exists. It is in all the scriptures, you know, where you cannot, you know, fornicate, you cannot have sin, or, you know, and have sexual, you know, affairs outside of marital status and so on and so forth. So, but because we've come so long, so far away from those basics of protective, you know, tenets, you know, which if we do, life will be easier, right? Because here's the thing. When you work in the realm of outside of religion, you're open territory. You know, all the sensations, all the sinful stuff can be there, whether it's from gambling to, you know, I mean, people commit murder, commit crimes, commit stuff because they're outside of the realm, you know, religious, you know, doctrines, right? If you're in religious form,
my morals have to have a foundation, to put it simply, right? If my morals have no foundation, then who's to say, you know, my right is your right, your wrong is my wrong, you know? So,
well, again, what I'm saying is that historically we had these ancient texts and practices, you know, that proved good over centuries, you know, or millennia, right? But as we got, you know, into the new age, new modern stuff, these things have, obviously throughout history, we do have instances of where that wasn't, you know, the case. I mean, from the Roman Empire to the Greeks. I mean, there's all historical stuff that shows that people did all kind of crazy stuff, orgies and you name it. Sex was rampant in the Middle Ages and you know, all the stuff. But the fact of the matter is, as people get religious, you know, part of any, whether it's, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and in other, you know, denominations, it's very big as a component to be wedded, you know, to before you actually, you know, consume, you know, a relationship and so on and so forth. But that's become now almost like, you know, it's like, you know, even let's call it blunt, you know, for the kids today, they're like, oh, are you a virgin? Ooh, she's a virgin. She's a virgin. Right. I mean, we hear those things. I mean, it's like, it's almost like, you know, sin if you are these days, right? It's the opposite, right? Things have changed. So therefore we're open to an easy, you know, prey, if you want to call it ourselves, to all these sensations and the temptations, right? And so as opposed to having some sort of controls. Now, if you have fear of God, for example, you know, you probably will be refraining from doing things. I mean, whether it's cursing and or stealing or cheating or being, you know, lying and so on and so forth. People tend to be a lot more scrutinized that way because they have a belief system that gives, as you said, the moral compass is there. So it's different. Right. Now, you have found some of that through somehow. Was that through the process of, you know, regression or redemption? Or was it just like, you know, as you were doing this, you kind of like went into that path so you can help yourself? Was it a tool or was it actually the venue?
Honestly, mine is kind of unique in this way, in that I would not say I found God in recovery. I would not say, there was no knowledge or education that was part of my recovery process when it came to Christianity, when it came to religion. I was raised in, to be honest, I was raised in in a lot of ways, the type of home that I want to create for my own family. I was raised in a really good home where I felt loved, I felt safe, but also we were, you know, Christianity was not just a cultural thing for us. It wasn't just like we go to church on Sundays. We did do those things, but my parents did a great job. They taught us the Bible. They taught us scriptural truths. They taught us, you know, principles to live by. And a lot of that stuff I've kept with me, you know, from my childhood, but it's also a reminder that head knowledge isn't enough to save you, right? Head knowledge is not enough to keep somebody from going off and doing stupid, in my case, right? I'm the type of person who, generally speaking, I got to like touch the stove 5-6 times and get burned 5-6 times before I stop touching it. And so it wasn't enough that I had memorized Proverbs and that I had gone to church and I knew I could tell you the gospel, you know, I could recount all that. And I believed it in my head. I believed those things to be true. But I there's never been a day in my life where I didn't believe that God was real, that Jesus came to earth and died for our sins. I just felt like I'm too screwed up. That's not going to be for me. I'm too jacked up. I've missed the boat. So that's where I was. Because, I mean, when I talk about self-hatred, when I talk about depression, like, I'm not mincing words. I wanted so badly for God to just take me off the earth. I wanted so badly to have never been created. And yet, I was never willing to, you know, push myself off the edge. Because the way I looked at it was like, well, I know where I'm going to end up, so I don't want to do that. Okay. I mean, so even in the darkest of, no, you're good. I mean, even in the darkest of places, I still believed like biblical truths, you know? But what happened in terms of religion has been a huge part of my recovery walk, but I don't even like think about it as religion, just because I think of that as kind of like a stuffy word. What happened was God used the recovery process and people that were part of my recovery walk to lead me to a place where I could even go, okay, I can have a relationship with the Creator. I can have a relationship with my Savior. It's not about me being perfect. Yes, I'm accountable for my actions, but you know, I am called to something greater, and you know, my past does not have to define my future. My past matters, and my past is real, and consequences are real. But an incredible part of my life that I'm so grateful for every single day is that the very thing that kept me in bondage, you know, the sexual sin, the sexual addiction, sexual infidelity, all this, the very thing that kept me feeling like I was the worst human to ever walk the earth, the worst dad, the worst husband, you know, God has equipped me through recovery to take that and now like use it against the enemy. You know, use it to help other men because it's given me a platform to speak from. And so the thing that was like, was my prison, sexual addiction, has now become something that has equipped me greatly. You know, to be a better dad, to be a better husband, to be a better man, because I know what it is to struggle. I know how much I'm grateful for every single day, because I know how much I don't deserve my family, you know? So like, I could go on and on just on that one piece. Like, motivation for me, one word, gratitude, because I'm surrounded by things that I should, by my own merit, I should have lost. And yet, you know, God has chosen to allow, you know, to give them back to me. I'm so thankful for that.
Oh, so that's a huge word, one word, but it's a powerful word. Gratitude is I mean, I think we if we all practice gratitude, we'll be better beings as a whole humanity, right?
Yeah.
You know, gratitude is a big thing. Being thankful, being grateful for who we have and what we have, you know, at all times, you know. And yes, I love what you said. Yes, you were raised in the environment that was fairly religious, but they didn't stop you. And by the way, you're not the only one. I mean, 90% of the people that probably have addiction, any type of addiction, come from environments where the addiction is forbidden. Yeah, they fall into it. Because, I mean, if you think about it, if there is a good power, which is the power of religious, you know, belief, then you have the power of the evil stuff, right? And so those two energies kind of go, you know, side by side and facing each other at all times. It's the old fight, right? And so, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I have a joke about it, like, devil doesn't go with people that don't have faith. He wants the people that have faith to remove them from faith. That's his work, right?
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
It's a real thing. I mean, he's not busy with the one that had already done. He wants people that are kind of like, oh, we believe. Okay, well, if you believe, let me get you from you believe. Because that was his own thing, right? So the fact is, and by the way, this is true in most of the religions, you know, believe. So it's not even just Christianity. Whether, you know, you listen to the show in parts of the world that may not have Christianity, This can still fit in, you know, equally into this, because this is humanity, right? And right. So, but I love what you said, that the idea that you were able to kind of work through this, and you worked, and people in your life did not bail on you, and that's a big thing. I mean, you still have a family. Now, obviously, it's been a minute, you know, I mean, a long minute, you know, journey from where you were, where you stopped, and now. So that's my question to you now. The hardest part about addiction is that people are afraid that they'll be exposed to whatever they're addicted to any given moment. You know, I mean, if you're smoking, you know, you can be smoke free for years, and you get into an environment where smoke is relevant or prevalent, it may be a problem. You get into a bar for whatever, you get a tense situation and you get that sip and now it's over. You know, how has it been? How difficult has it been for you to maintain? Because I think that's the hardest part about anything. When you recover, it's like, you know, you can never be in front of such a thing, because if you are, you're vulnerable to this. Well, at least you were. How do you do that? How can people even prevent themselves from falling into that again once they get clean?
Yeah. That's a powerful question. And the answer will depend on the guy, because there's multiple guys that I know of who have 5, 10, 15, 20 years of sobriety and healthy living. It would probably answer that question a little bit differently in terms of, you know, do they still struggle or do they still feel vulnerable ever? But across the board, I would say this is true of anyone I know in the recovery program that I'm a part of, anyone who's got 8-10 years of sobriety. And definitely this is true of myself. The answer is yes, I do still struggle, but I don't struggle. I mean, it's not even the same ballpark. It's not even the same league as what a struggle was 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Because I'm faced with things every day, of course, that are a trigger or that are a possible trigger. A huge part of my recovery work now, starting this year, is, you know, going on podcast and then doing Instagram work, you know, going on to put content out there. I mean, just from a visual perspective, Instagram's, you know, it's filled with people trying to get attention, right? So it's filled with stuff that absolutely in my addiction could have taken me down in a hot second. And so I'm super intentional about how I approach Instagram, how I approach visually, you know, what am I clicking on and how am I responding, like all of that stuff. So number one, I go in very intentionally with boundaries, accountability. Every day I'm accountable through various things to Recovery Brothers, who know all my stuff. They know my whole story. They're free to ask me any question. They're free to give me feedback and advice. And I'll tell you right now, I get annoyed sometimes. Like, man, what, you're badgering me. And then I remind myself, if the price I pay for safety, if the price I pay to be able to thrive in life as a dad, as a husband, as a man, is that occasionally I get annoyed by an accountability question. That's okay. I can deal with that.
That's being accountable.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. If you're never annoyed, if you're never frustrated by an accountability partner, you probably need a stronger accountability partner. That's just the tough truth of it. So there's a couple different ways I'll answer the question, which is, yes, I struggle, but not nearly as much as I used to. But I do always recognize I could get back to the place that I was if I chose. And I think about it like this: every choice I make is one more brick that I'm adding to a foundation or to a wall, right? It's like, so what kind of foundation do I want to build? So if I choose to, you know, watch something on YouTube that, okay, it's not pornography, it's not, you know, pornography, but it's really not the thing I should be looking at. It's not the thing that I should be feasting my eyes on. Okay, maybe that in of itself is not going to send me spiraling back to what I used to be 10 years ago. Maybe that by itself wouldn't be cheating. Maybe that by itself isn't porn, but it's definitely one more brick, right? Or this movie that I want to watch that, okay, yeah, there's this sex scene and it's like, I can, you know, just skip past it or whatever, but, you know, well, maybe just don't even watch it, right? Because it's just one more brick. Do I want to be laying that brick or not? So healthy bricks, accountability, right? Being honest, owning my stuff, like those are healthy bricks. And on one hand, I mean, yeah, I can definitely mess up my life and destroy my life with one single choice. But most destructive things in life are not that. Most destructive things in life are not single choice actions. They're series of choices. They're things that have taken place over the course of months or years. And so me maintaining safety, me being healthy, it's reframing how I'm, you know, viewing the world around me. But I do hope that I can give some encouragement that, yeah, by God's grace, I'm so thankful to say this, that I don't struggle nearly as much as I used to. And when there is that trigger, you know, when something does pop up, I'm able to view it. It's almost like I can push pause and go, okay, here's something that's a trigger. Here's something that might be a temptation. Well, how do I want to react to it? Again, it's like which brick do I want to lay? And in my addiction, there was none of that. It was like I was living in the fast lane, going 100 miles an hour, just being compulsive and impulsive, making the decision that felt right in the moment, or, you know, going with my muscle memory, limbic system only, right? And so now it's not that I'm perfect. It's not that I don't get tempted, but I don't rely on my limbic system to make all my choices. I can actually, you know, use the old prefrontal cortex and make healthy, moral, right choices. Again, not perfectly, but over the course of my life, I'm generally making, you know, more right choices than wrong, as opposed to the past where it was just flying by the seat of my pants, doing what felt good in that moment.
I think what you're describing really is you're trying to you remove yourself from the equation of anything that could be a risk factor. One, two, is you are in a position like everybody else that may not have an addiction, right? Because technically, anyone that is not addicted to porn or otherwise, you know, they all come close to these things. But then, as you said, what's holding them back is that they have a different way of thinking of things and they look at it. So you basically are, I would say, normalized to the level of anyone without addiction. Yes, you can, you're a little bit more vulnerable in a way because you've been there and you know what it feels like and tastes like, but certainly you're in control enough that, you know, like anybody else and anyone else that may not have an addiction, because still, as you said, if you put enough bricks there, you probably fall into that same, you know, space. This is not like, you know, oh, let's laugh it up, you know, these guys. Bro, you know, I have to say, we never judge people for what they're going through. Whatever people are going through, they're going through, because it's not like, you know, some people's like, well, the choices you make. Yes, you're right. The choices you make. Sometimes it's a series of things that just add up. And before you know it, you're in this nice little twister. It's very difficult to come out of a twister or a rip current, whatever. I mean, first of all, you have to be aware that you're in a twister or right. a hurricane or something. And sometimes you're not, you know, you might be in the eye of the hurricane. You're not, it looks good, but it's really surrounded by all bad stuff. So you don't know what's going on, by the way, hurricane, I didn't mean it that way, but you know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is, like, you know, what you're saying is really true. And I love the concept that what you said about also being checked by your accountability, you know, partners and brothers, you know, that's important. Now, I have a question. I know we talked a lot more about almost guys stuff, but in the system, or at least the programs that you have, I'm assuming there were, you know, members of, you know, different, you know, women, men, all together, or were they separate? And how does that work? Just for our, you know, our audiences that are, you know, women, what does look like for them? I mean, is it similar? I mean, is there anything different on their world that you have been, you know, exposed to? Because I'm sure if they are in the program, they'll be suffering from the same thing. So what do we say to them?
Yeah, that's a huge one. And I'll be honest, it's one that a lot of work still needs to be done. There are resources for women who struggle with porn addiction, women who struggle with sexual addiction, but there are far fewer than there are for men, because you're right. The struggle is different. And so the resources, they're going to be different. And then, of course, just given the nature of what we're dealing with, I would say, you know, ideally, a man should not be mentoring a woman who's struggling with sexual addiction, or vice versa. Even with like AA, they generally try to avoid that, you know, for all these obvious reasons, right? And so, like for the group that I'm part of, which is, by the way, you know, the group I'm part of, this is a ministry only. It's not what I do for a living. Prodigals up here in Alaska. So we're a local group only. We don't do anything online. We're not doing courses or anything like that. There's a few different groups in Anchorage and in the Valley. And these groups are men only. I know that there have been some requests for a group to start for women who struggle. And that's something that, like one of the churches here in Anchorage, you know, they have been working on, is to try to build that. But it's a tough one, because again, they want to find somebody who has experienced some healing, some maturity, but ideally who is a woman, you know, who can walk with those struggling. Just to give a tangible resource though, a couple of them. I have been blessed to, you know, connect with a lot of folks, both in this space and also not in this space, you know, folks like yourself who, you know, have me on to talk about various things. I've also been on podcasts that are, you know, specific to sexual addiction, specific to, you know, Christianity, various things, right? And so one of those people that's awesome, who I can definitely connect people with, Anna Murphy. If you send me an Instagram message or give me a follow, I've tagged her in some posts. We've collaborated on some stuff. Similar to me, she doesn't do this for a living, but she is somebody who's very open about her own story, that she struggled with porn addiction. And she is somebody who also, you know, has experienced healing from that. So that is one person, you know, that, you know, she's only one person, but, you know, she's somebody that can be a resource if people have questions. And then, you know, the other thing is Pure Desire Ministries. They have a lot of great resources around this, whether it's for men who struggle, women who struggle, or also for my wife's end of things, for the betrayal trauma healing. So Pure Desire Ministries does incredible work. If you just Google Pure Desire Ministries, you know, there's various groups and books and stuff that'll pop up, or, you know, give them a follow on Instagram. And I always emphasize, like, resources by themselves, you know, they're not going to matter unless I want to seek healing, right? You can recommend all the books and all the groups and all the therapists and none of that's going to matter if I'm not willing to do hard work, or if I'm not feeling broken and desperate enough to seek those resources out. So I don't necessarily emphasize resource, like a resource list, as the be all end all, because somebody's got to want it, but resources do matter. Give me a follow, give me a message on Instagram if you want to be connected with Anna. And then, yeah, also just check out Pure Desire Ministries, if you want more information on any end of this spectrum.
Well, Logan, thank you. I mean, you know, the work you do is really sharing. You are a resource, you know, at least, you know, because people who will follow you, they will know the struggles and stuff. You also have different connections that you have made that can help and assist, you know, finding a way out of this. And by the way, thank you for trying to clarify, you know, the idea between, you know, women, you know, I guess programs versus men programs. And by the way, when you talk about sexual addiction in today's space, it could be men, women. There's all kind of levels. So that could be dangerous either way you want it, even within one group.
Yeah.
So again, it is just, you know, it's an addiction no matter what how you slice it, right? So it's very difficult. So I think there's got to be a way to help people get out of this. And, you know, certainly ministries do a terrific job about these things. And I think they have availability in all kind of, you know, any church or religious system probably has some level of potential help that can guide people. That's one way to do it. You know, I'm not sure, but yeah,
well, sadly, not nearly enough. And it's very common, especially in churches, to be honest. This is kind of starting to go away. But as somebody who grew up going to church, and I had a great relationship with my church, this is a common, if anybody's been a churchgoer for a long time, you've probably experienced this. There can be this sentiment within a church that it's like, well, you shouldn't need any of this mumbo jumbo psychotherapy. All you need to do is read your Bible more, be a better Christian, love God more. That's what you need to focus on. And it's like, I should be those things, yes, but I also need to do I need to do the tangible work, whether it's recovery program, therapist, whatever, of rewiring my brain, right? Of building healthy habits, healthy infrastructure. So again, it's not one or the other. It's like, I need to be doing both of those things, the spiritual and the physical tangible.
Hello, sorry, you made me smile because what you described here is the same thing. Like, you know, it's like telling someone who's really sick, you know, well, yeah, all you have to do is eat healthy. Well, I can do all that stuff once I figure out my sickness. Right. I got to fix my illness first. I got to fix, and then I can go to preventative stuff. You know,
no, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing, right? Because I mean, what you're describing, yeah, that we should all be doing these good things, right? But unfortunately, when you pass that point of no return, you're already in the disease mode, or you know, or the sickness or illness. You know, now you got to fix that. You know, and that's not going to be just because you want to believe, because if that was it that easy, it would have been. Now, of course, belief works, but you have to get out of it, because the whole idea is that you are so far apart now, and you have all these anchors that are guiding you and pulling you in the other direction, opposite of where you're supposed to be. So again, like everything else, we if we can get the default right in the first place and maintain it, that's great. But a lot of us today are kind of deviating from that, and so we need that assistance. And you know what? The more resources, the more help we can have, the more at least being open to discuss these things sometimes is just the key. As you said, a lot of people may not, you know, state it, but they may be going through the same stuff. They just don't know about it, or they know about it. They don't want to share with anybody because, like, it's hard to tell people, hey, listen, guys, this is my problem. You know,
for sure.
People will probably make fun of you or judge you or whatever. You lose friends. You know, it could be, you know, a disaster because now your spouse or significant other can have a very bad reaction. You try to solve problems, maybe avoid, can be a lot of things. Now, obviously, we're not going to solve that today, but certainly being aware, that's the first step. You know, seeking the help is the second, you know, step, I think, you know, based on all the processes that I've, you know, talked to about addiction. Those are the key elements, and being willing to take, you know, the necessary steps and maintain, because this is not a quick fix. This is a long journey, and, you know, you cannot relapse. You got to continue. And so you have to put all the measures in place to prevent it. And as you said, you can see triggers, but you avoid being even in the presence of those triggers, because that's the way to actually do it. Like, literally, if I have an addiction with alcohol, I'm not going to hang out in a bar. I mean, let's just be clear. It will all be like defeating the purpose, right? I mean, someone's like, well, you have to have strong will. I mean, I don't care how strong will you are, but if you have all the environment that is completely, you know, going to get you back into it, that may not work. Will alone does not work. But the best will is not to be even in it, right? To just be outside of the whole concept. So it's an important piece. So thank you for, you know, I mean, we've exceeded an hour, Logan, but it's just, it was cool. You know, we've covered quite a bit, you know, and thank you for really coming out and also sharing your life and through the work you do. And really you're helping people avoid where you are, you know, where you were, and really, you give them hope that they can do this. And even for those that may think that their relationship and their families can be at a risk, there is a hope for that too. So you're really giving hope to people that no matter what. Now, at the end of the day, folks, we are human, we are sinful, we are weak, and temptation will always win if we don't have the solid, preventative measures, as you said, as the church you refer to. So we need to build our foundations correctly. But even the best of us with foundation can still weaken, and certainly fall into these traps. And again, and these are a lot. We're surrounded by just temptation and things that can get it very easily, whether it's porn here or in the sexual, discussion, or it could be, again, drugs. This gambling is another big one. Now you have.
Oh, I had a huge sports gambling addiction. That was a whole part of this, is it wasn't just one addiction. It was an unhealthy, double, hidden lifestyle that was all these things mixed together. Absolutely.
But gambling could be just like, it's funny because, for every place you gamble, is like, if you have problems with gambling, call the number. But I mean, it's like, this cigarette, causes, cancer. I mean, given a disclaimer, it just takes the liability away, but doesn't take away the problem, right? You know, people will still struggle with whatever it is. And if they're cold, most people are not going to do it or admit again that they have an addiction to start with, right? They don't know that. All they know is like, I lost money, I want to bring my money back. And that cycle doesn't stop. So again, that's just another example. I mean, there's plenty. I mean, Shopaholics is real. I mean, people that spend money on buffing the house is real. Oh, yeah. There's so many addictions, and right now we have people that are addicted to their phones. They can't remove themselves from social media. Believe it or not, this is real stuff, folks. And so you addressed today one element, which is a big element, and it affects all humanity, I think, as a whole. So thank you for doing that and coming on.
Yeah.
And again, so you said your handle on Instagram is?
No Longer in Bondage. And there's periods in between the words. I think if you just search No Longer in Bondage, I'll come right up, Logan Hufford. But yeah, my handle is No Period Longer Period In Period Bondage.
I'll have the link in the description of the show so people can link up quickly to you, and then they can, connect with you, and you can guide them, you can share with them, you can help them. Certainly that's the great work that you're doing. So thank you so much. So since we're coming to the end of the show, what would be some words of wisdom to just leave our audiences with right now?
Whenever I'm asked this question, I usually come back to the same thing, which is my mission on this earth. Like, I firmly believe, like, why God, created me and put me on this earth. It's not to keep people, to explain addiction, to scare people so that they don't ever fall into it. No, like, that would be great, I suppose. But my whole mission is so that somebody can hear this, watch this, see me on Instagram, whatever, and go, okay, I've already done all that stuff. I'm struggling right now. But they can be like me and go, whoa, other people have gotten out of the cave. Other people have found freedom. And so what I want to leave anybody with, whether you are somebody who has struggled, or maybe you're somebody who has, struggled with betrayal trauma, you've been cheated on, you've suffered that way, or again, maybe just a loved one, right? You're a dad, you're a mom, you're a pastor, whatever, if somebody who has been through this, I promise you there is healing available. There is freedom. There is recovery available. Everyone's path is going to look different. And some people's path is going to be way longer and more uphill than others. But there is healing available for every single person. And that's not cheap words. That's a big promise, but it's a promise that I'm willing to make, because I've seen it time after time. People who have gone through incredible struggles, and natural consequences are real. The journey to healing is going to look different for every person, but don't ever think that you have done too much. You've done too much wrong. You suffered too much, or you've been in this addiction for too long, that you're not going to be able to find freedom. I promise you, if you seek it, you will be able to find freedom. But you got to diligently seek it. It's not necessarily going to be the first book that you read, or the first person that you've listened to on a podcast, or the first program you try. But you got to keep working at it. But healing is available.
They're like everything else, right? It's a work in progress. You got to do, take the steps and take the action. But there was something that I wanted to just address quickly, because when you mentioned something about you didn't push yourself off the ledge, and you said, I know where I'm going. I kind of laughed. So I just want to clarify, because some people sometimes they get critical and, you know,
sure,
on these shows. So let's be clear, you know, when you refer to that, you know, as you know, the thoughts of suicidal, you know, or, you know, mm-hmm. kind of ideation, you know, that's pretty real. And it's happened. We've covered a lot of suicide, you know, shows with psychiatry experts, as well as different, you know, professionals in the area and therapists and advocates. It is a big deal. People get to that point. But as you said, you know, from a religious perspective, you were there. So I wasn't laughing because, you know, I undermined the idea. I just, and you know, laughed as you said that, you know what the outcome. Now, of course, some people say, like, you know, because in the most of us that believe in some sort of a denomination of religion, it is kind of like known that, you know, suicide has a different outcome in terms of, you know, heaven and hell and all this stuff. So that's a whole discussion on its own, you know,
right.
You believe or not, but that's what you referred to. So that was, you know, cause you went there. That's why I laughed. But the fact of the matter, folks, you know, we don't want that in anyone. We need people to seek help, just like, you know, for addiction, you know, that's a big, you know, that's a pandemic that exists, and it's ongoing, and it's actually affecting younger and younger people. So again, for those of you who are watching and listening, if you need more help in that area, please do refer to our shows that have to do with that, or other experts and shows, you know, out there that talk about suicide, and always 9998, I think, is number for that purpose. So seek the help that you need there. Don't undermine it. You know, it's a big, serious problem. And a lot of people sometimes get to that point and they start thinking about it. In your case, that wasn't the case, because you kind of went back to your roots in terms of religious, you know, doctrine, and you figured out, like, you know, I don't want to do this because... And that's a pretty scary thought when you kind of believe that, you know, I might wind up in the wrong place and I don't want to do that. It may be.
And to be honest, for me personally, like, it wasn't even if I make the choice, then like that will put me in hell, because like suicide specifically, I know that is, yeah, certain religions, that is a thing. With me, it was just like, well, I'm looking at the evidence. I guess I must not be a Christian, because otherwise I wouldn't be messing up, right? Which is its own ball of wax that I had to work with. It's like, Christians can still struggle, but
everybody does. Well, again, we're human, right? Yeah. So that's the thing, you know, if you exist as a human, you are, you know, not perfect. And sin is around us, and, you know, there's temptation, and there's different ones, and there's different types. And, you know, the devil works in mysterious ways, and he knows how to do things, you know, to get us. He's got enough expertise. He's been in existence from the beginning. So he's got a little bit, you know, a few years and decades and millennia ahead of us in terms of his plan and work. So it's crazy, but it's real. So from a religious aspect, that's at least one angle. And even if you don't believe, folks, you know, at the end of the day, no one wants to go to that route. You know, don't end your life, because you're meant to do better in this world. You know, we want you to just strive and do better. And if you're not sure how to do this, seek help. That's the main thing. So again, I just wanted to highlight that, because that's a big point. And although you didn't really kind of talk about it, you kind of refer to it, but you know, I just wanted to touch on it here quickly. So again, 998 number, or seek your local help, whatever. If you even thinking and you have these ideologies or thoughts in your mind, and we all have these thoughts, and some people get them more expendable than the others, and more expensive than others, you know, don't entertain them, folks. All right. Well, Logan, thank you so much for being with us. And, you know, we spent a nice chunk of time, but it was worth every minute of it and every second, you know, a lot of good, valuable insights and, you know, through your own experience. So thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you having me on.
Pleasure. So there you have it, folks. You know, this is a topic that's probably, again, as we initially stated, as taboo, but, you know, it's only taboo if we don't discuss it. I mean, I think let's make it, you know, a part of our, you know, discussion and share it. You know, you can talk in your own circles, folks. It is important to don't undermine this discussion, because it is real. It is happening. It affects people. You might not even know if you have kids. They could be the next person struggling with this. You can be yourself, you know, struggling and not even knowing about it, you know, at any given point in our lives, we can easily fall, you know, into this trap here. So do the due diligence. And again, you know, do connect with Logan, you know, on Instagram and, you know, any other service that can help you here. That being said, I'm Hurricane H. We'll be talking soon. We're going to show on a topic. Bye for now.